Okay, Bastian, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you guys. Yeah, that's quite new. No readings, no prayer, no, just poof. There you go. Yoo-hoo. Enjoy. Yeah, thank you guys. Yeah, I'm an addict. Definitely. I got clean during the pandemic. It's a miracle that I'm still alive, and I think I feel that I owe it all to some sort of a force out there that flows through me and still wants to flow through me, because I'm still here on Earth, having this experience, a spirit having this human experience. Okay, so yeah, I was asked to share, and I always love to carry some sort of a message. Look, this is my experience. It's not, you know, I'm not telling you what to do or do this, do that. I'm not a guru. I'm a guy from the Frisian lands, and yeah, I would love to share my experience, strength, and hope. So yeah, let's begin a little bit. I don't, how long do I have? Like 15, 20 minutes?
However long you want, just know it's pretty relaxed about timing.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, so a couple of lifetimes will do. Yeah, okay. Yeah, let's yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah, okay. Well, let you know, my name is Bastian. This name was given to me by my mother and father. My mother passed away the 3rd of February this year, and my father 5 years before that. Got one older sister. She's totally opposite from me, 3 years older, and yeah, like all management like, and yeah, totally different. But anyway, my father was a veteran military man. My mother was on the other side of the spectrum. She was a very highly trained and skilled nurse, which was strange because if you were the wife of an officer, you should shut up, stay home, drink your sherry, and do the kids. But she didn't. So I was blessed to. I'm an outdoor man, outdoor guy. When I grew up, nature was my go-to, and it still is. Because of my dad's job, we moved a lot, really a lot. It's actually outrageous. And I was 13 till we moved to the northern part of the Holland, Frisian lands, and this is where I found my home. And still today, this is the place where I belong. I can feel that this land flows through me, and I can read it, I can feel it, I can sense it. So, growing up, different schools, different sort of cultures. I always felt like the newcomer. I was a shy boy. Fantasy world was my number one go-to. You could find me either in a tree or in the library. And pretty soon we had like this sort of little tiny house near our house. And I always ask, hey, can I sleep there tonight? So I was sort of already isolating from the family unit. My father was a raging alcoholic, and this is where I learned that the outside world wasn't safe, especially grown-ups. They were strange. Ooh, no, because when I would sort of go to dad, say, hey, when you're a kid, my tummy would ache, and then he would lay his big warm hand on my tummy, and then like within half a minute it would heal, and then ooh, I said thank you. But then, like a minute later, he could explode, and because of something futile. And so I thought, whoa, what's the, and I sort of shied away from, whoa, what's happening? And I think the good thing is that I learned that all these situations helped me to grow some sort of a radar on, hey, is it safe to share or to ask a question? Which of course is not a real good foundation of any growing up, but hey, it is like it is. When we moved to the north, yeah, there was a lot of getting used to. I grew up basically really in the middle of nowhere, and there were all these farmer kids, and they were speaking a strange language, and I had this accent, and it was like, oh, what's happening here? Oh, but no, I got a job at the neighbor, a farmer, and what I used to do was just work at the farm, and yeah, my father was doing a tour in Egypt at that time. He did two tours as a military man, so I was at home with my sister and my mother a lot of the times, and yeah, it was totally different to each time move from place to place, start over again, and I think this is where I really felt, hey, I've got no roots. And pretty soon, I think a year after we moved, because I was, new school, and I was sort of hanging around with the loser kids, and pretty soon, yeah, liquid substances came. Oh, I'm allowed to call. Yeah, I'm allowed to name them here. Yeah, so no boundary. Yeah, good. Okay. So the drinking began, and when it was harvest time, it was like, woohoo, harvest time. Come on, boy. Yeah, be a real man. And basically, everybody would get wasted like a whole weekend or even more. And I felt like, ooh, this feels good. And I had this experience before when I was in France with my family on holiday, visiting another family member. I think this was the first experience that I really felt like, wow, this is cool. I had two nieces, they make these local cider, homebrewed cider, and one of them, she stole one of those bottles, and we went into the mountains, to the hills, and I could hear the U2 song playing on New Year's Day, and I remember having this buzz, and I felt, wow, this the music, everything's perfect, wow, totally chilled, totally relaxed. And immediately I was looking for that same feeling. Now, so when about age 14, a beginning of, yeah, 14 and a half, 15, in the town where I live now, Heerenveen, small town, Holland was good, coffee shops, coffee shops, yeah. So yeah, you could get substances without being basically bothered by the police, and it was like the soft version. So I started combining the two, and I just remembered like that same feeling that I had with that first experience, that whoa, but now it was like a 3D movie experience in my head. I could go to my room, play music, close my eyes, and I would be in space. Ba-ba. Wow, this is life. This is cool. I don't need to worry about anything anymore. Woo. And I remember thinking the same thing, feeling the same thing. I want to have this feeling forever. Wow. And I kept on chasing it, but not in the way that it was unmanageable yet. It was sort of like, okay, I went to school, I did my thing, I wasn't a really good student. School didn't inspire me to give the best, and I was still a little bit of a odd fellow, but it was okay, but the thing I did do was clowning, just to, yeah, m have some sort of an attitude, some sort of a mask that I could work with to hide what was going on behind these blue eyes. And so when yeah, it was fun and games. A couple of relationships, and then I met my first girlfriend. She passed away like 3 years ago. She was Native American. I went twice to the reserve, And her parents were totally different. They were both teachers, and if I would go there, we would play guitar, play music, drink together, smoke together, and it was all good. Have good food, and at home it was like, oh no, the scarcity of stuff. There was no really okay. I had food. I had a roof over my head, but like the lifestyle of more that like the French, the Burgundic lifestyle of enjoying life. Whoa, that was new. And talking about feelings. Whoa, that was new too. And suddenly I could look at my family unit and say, whoa, what's happening here? And I remember I was 23 years old. And for the first time in my life, I called my daddy, who I used to call Sir. Or father, I called him by his first name. I said, "Yes, Willem," and he looked at me like he was about to explode because he was a military man, and you shouldn't talk to a military man like that. And I remember looking at him, and the fire came out of his eyes, and I said, "Yeah, I don't think it's good that I call you sir anymore because we're equal." Whoa, and then. He wanted to react, and but I said, "Hey, I think we clash because we look alike." And then I could see him sort of swallow something. I think it was his pride, or maybe it was the mirror I was able to give him. And suddenly, he looked at me with like totally different. He said, "Ooh, I think he felt that it was time to really connect with his son." And a couple of weeks afterwards, he said, "Okay, I've been thinking about it, and I think you're right." And so this is when sort of a loving relation started to grow. But in the meantime, I didn't do too good at school. Sort of, being just enough to pass, and when my relationship fell apart, the broken hearts, I was still working in coffee shops. I just retreated into oblivion, and I didn't care about the world anymore. And it brought me down to my knees. I was in a car crash. Two people died on instance. I was a survivor. There was this survivor guilt that I carried with me. And more substances, that just kept on coming. And I was in the middle of the scene. I was a artistic guy, played in several bands, so people loved me for my artistic being. They even invited me to come to stay after hours. Yeah, this is an interesting guy, man. Okay, and here come the clowning again. I started clowning really. And using my punk rock image as a tool to get more. And well, the good thing is, the whole punk rock scene, I was able to express the madness in my head by playing loud, and people would say, yeah, come on. And yeah, it inspired me to do my best. And it was the rock and roll lifestyle, the punk rock culture, the subculture that I felt part of, but slowly but steadily, I could see that the people in my inner circle were all addicts. And after the car crash, it was a wake-up call. And I remember walking through this alley, the Wolfensteeg, that's very near where Tamara lives, the Wolfensteeg, the alley of the wolf. And there was this little building, and there was applause, and I thought, "Well, what's happening here?" And I thought, "Hey, there's something about this place." And then 3 months later, I walked the same alley, and the door was open, and I thought, "Whoa!" Something inside me said, "Hey, take a look." I was curious, and I looked inside, and there was this young man on a unicycle. And he was throwing clubs in the air, and there were two older lady saying and said, "Hello, hello, what's this?" "Oh, yeah, we are the circus school. So yeah, oh, we just started. So if you want to join." And I looked at this place. It was like one big stage with wires, with balls, with a dancing floor. And I thought, "Whoa, okay, this is good." I needed to focus on restoring my body, my spirit, and the punk rock scene was still there. I was doing theater, the artistic type of guy. And then, yeah, I started working my body, and I wanted to be free. I wanted to do street acts and travel the world. And I did for a little bit, but same thing happened. Relationship heartbroken, back door open, papa, everything went down the drain. Unmanageability, not being able to pay the rent, though I still worked in coffee shops. And I had this secret double life that in the end really killed me, killed my spirit, and it wanted to kill my body. And I remember there were times where I had these moments of clarity that I said, "Whoa, I really need to change my ways." But what I did, I was changing houses, changing relationships, changing work, and there was always an excuse to use. Now, fast forward a little bit, the dance scene hit, and the powders and the pills and the woo-hoo, yeah, it was 24/7. Yeah, I could just go on and go on. Started using coke for a long time. It brought me to my knees very fast. Then I moved again. Nobody knew that I was basically evicted, not even my girlfriend. Yeah, then I started using the speed and cheap liquor. I stopped. I sort of juggled with substances. And again, Holland was good. I could grow my own, sell some stuff, had some money, do odd chores. But in the end, I had no vision of what life meant. And I was always escaping feelings and reality. I had a good job. Yeah, I was this functional addict. Yeah, definitely. But always this second life. And again, I was sort of laid off out of the job because I was still the rebel, and I wanted to. I'm always a rebel against the system. And for me, it was a go-to to keep kicking against the pricks. Okay, so 5 years ago, my father died, and I was able to take care of him together with mom. And my sister was sort of hanging around or criticizing mom. At that time, I had a girlfriend. She lost her brother. She went in psychosis. So I had to take care of my father, my girlfriend, my mother, and making sure that I was keeping my sister away from the family unit because she basically couldn't handle it. And at that time I was sort of cleaning up, but the back door was always open. And and taking care of dad, I could see that. I thought, "Whoa, I do not want to end up like this man." And the good thing was that my dad trusted me to take care of him, to put him on the potty, to wipe his ass, put him back on the bed. And this was where, for the first time, I felt that, yeah, you see, my dad is trusts me, and in his pain, he was very bullying against the people, against the nurses, and I was able to stand up for the first time and really say, "Hey, Dad, this is not the way we do it." Yeah, but the food is, I don't taste anything. Yes, and I know, but it's made from love. And then suddenly he felt like, okay, now I'm in the care of. I'm out of control here. The best thing that I can do is just to, yeah, be humbled again. And it was good to make amends. And I kept asking him, "Are we okay?" "Yeah, we're okay. Thank you so much." So that was a man's number one, and I wasn't even aware that in the step work, I'm currently working step eight for the second round. But it was good to feel it. And you know, the same thing happened after my dad died. My girlfriend was in psychosis, and I started using a lot. Almost had a car crash again. It was a wake-up call. I was 12 step by a brother from this local town, because I was in this poisonous relationship, and a lot had to do that. I was not present at all. Physically, I was present, but I was always running away from feelings, emotions. I was 12 step by a brother here. Now and then we meet. I was in the Mother Fellowship, and a year after my father died, at that time I had 41 days clean, and I was sitting down with mum at the terrace. We had lunch, and she opened up a big black book from the family unit, from the family history. And then the betrayal, because everything I felt as a kid was right there on the table, and I felt so betrayed. And first thing I did was, whoa, righteous anger, escape, bomb. And then I could see, suddenly I could see the pattern. I missed a turn, almost had a car crash, but I didn't. And a week later, I met the constable who sort of took care of me. And I was very, we have a word for it, obstinate, which I wasn't aggressive, but very like, whoa, 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 whoa. I was pissed off, something like that. And I started sharing my story. I sabotaged the blowing mechanism for percentage reading of the alcohol in my blood. And, you know, so I got the maximum fine. But anyway, I took it. But a week later, I met the same constable, and he said, "Yo, ooh, how are you doing?" He said, "Yeah, good. I'm going to meetings again." I said, "Oh, you're so lucky. 2 hours after you missed the curve, the turn, a young guy did the same, and he didn't survive. He died in my arms. So I think you are a very lucky man." And I could feel this guardian angel tapping on my shoulder. Said, "Do you get the message now? Your time ain't over here. You got something to do." And it hit me like a hammer, like whoosh, like an uppercut. Oh, dang, this stuff is real, man. Yeah, I could lose my life. Woo. And then I mustered up the courage to ask for help. And there were people at the AA meeting saying, "Go to this recovery house. This is a sort of a free zone. You know, you go there during the week. You can come back in the weekend. Take what you've learned back and grow from it. There's no urine tests. Only during the day there's stuff, and the rest you'll have to manage yourself." And this is where I, for the first time, I started to, re-socialize, do my chores, feel, name feelings. And after 2.5 months of doing this, and I felt really, really part of humanity again. You know, when I was in that recovery house with 18 other addicts, you're bound to be triggered. And that's exactly what they pushed for. So, hey, come on. Okay. You got a conflict. Okay. What you going to do? You going to swallow it? You going to be aggressive, or you going to say something? Okay. You going to work with it or against it? Okay. And there was this, actually, I'm so thankful, because this narcissistic guy tried to control everything, always sitting on the head of the table. "Wash your hands, don't talk during dinner, blah, 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 blah." And I was so out of tune by his sort of his authority. Rah! And why? It reminded me of my father. And after 2 months of not sleeping, there was this like this satellite going, "Wee, wee, him, it's him." Suddenly I woke up at 3 o'clock. I was able to get that satellite out of the air and smash it on the table and say, "Okay, Mr. Satellite, what are you saying?" And I started writing page after page. All trauma came up. It was all my own bullshit, my traumas, my triggers. And I shared it with the staff. And they said, "Oh, great, great stuff. This is what we're going to be working with." And this guy of 40 years in the field, old-timer, artistic guy, could be my brother. People called, "Hey, that's your brother." No. But and he said, "Okay, don't you know you've got a choice? You can walk away. You don't need to feed it. Aren't you glad that you are not like him?" "What?" "Yes, you can make a choice." "Oh, and don't need to fight." "No, not at all. Come on, we're going to do some inner child work," and boom, boom. So I stepped away from this poisonous relationship with this guy. I kept feeding him with anger. And suddenly he was out of control. And he totally freaked when he had no power over me anymore. And this was my first liberation of, yeah, being under the control of the anger in my head. I did a couple of beautiful sessions with the inner child, brought some pictures, and like three, four sessions were enough. Why? Because I had the inner child, that joy, that spontaneous joy, the choice to create, to be free, to step away from situations. Everything came back. And oh, I got goosebumps. Until this day, it still inspires me to listen to Little Bastian, because he's way more forgiving, way more intuitive, way more connected to than nature than the grown up is. And so, yeah, during the pandemic, couldn't go back to my recovery house. Yeah, I'm winding it down, guys, for you to have a chance to share back. I couldn't go back to my recovery house because of the pandemic. Thank God, Tamara, my Frisian sister, she sent me the link to the 24/7, and suddenly there was a window to the world on my phone. On my phone, I didn't even have a computer, but there was a message, and I kept on hearing the message. I remember being at home. My mother called me. My mother had a new boyfriend, and suddenly there were complaints. The first year was all hunky-dory, but I warned my mom. I said, "It's the same type of man. He's an alcoholic, ex-military man, very dominant. What? Please watch out." When I met him, I told him the same thing. "Hey, watch out with mom, otherwise I'll get you." He said, "Oh, okay, I respect." And he spent his youth in prison of war camp with the Japanese. So anyway, mom called. "Yeah, he's not nice." And I freaked out. It's the same thing. The inner child who always wanted to protect mother wasn't able to do it. Now I live in a situation where there with several people, like an anti-squad, discovered something under the sink and got more. And yeah, I even called mom. I asked questions about, that we had another sister. She died when she was 9 months. I started asking questions. A lot of anger came out. Whoa, whoa. And the next day, I realized, whoa, I'm in control. Or am I not in control? What happened? So, yeah, relapse. Big one. And ain't funny after 108 days of not using substances, suddenly, bam, the whole body is poisoned, back to way downer than down where I left my abuse. And suddenly, yeah, I'm gonna wrap it up here, guys. Suddenly I could hear this knock on the door, and it was like this entity of addiction, and it told me, "Aha. Bend over, assume the position, you're mine again. You know what to do." And I could feel it, I could sense it around me. And then I said, "Whoa, wait a minute, what's happening here? You need me. I don't need you. No. We're not gonna go, we're not gonna do this." Oh, first thing I did, I called my counselor. I said, "Hey, I relapsed." I think I called some other people. But this disease, this entity of addiction was totally on me. But realizing that it needs me as a vehicle to do this stupid stuff that I did, keep me under control and sort of push me like a marionette. Yoo-hoo! Ah, here's the substance. Woo-hoo! Like my life was like a radar screen, and where there was substances, I was very near that bleep. Now, after finishing the program at my recovery house, connecting with a sponsor, beautiful sponsor. Good to see you, sir. And suddenly I found out, hey, it's the same thing. I've got a choice. I've got to be vigilant. Where is the bleep? Yeah, bleep, bleep, bleep. There's the bleep. Good. The rest of the radar screen is mine. Aha. Good. Woohoo. And this is how I'm exploring the world in a creative fashion. I'm connected with like the wisdom and the Dharma from the Buddhist. I'm an elder in a shamanic group. Nature still is my inspiration. And I definitely know that each struggle is there for it's a golden opportunity to wiggle free, to work with it instead of against it. And in the fellowship, I found a beautiful connection. First convention, Kiev. A couple of months later, it was war. But it's all good right here, right now. I'm not future tripping. I'm not lingering in the past. I'm present here, as present as can be. My morning routines are: I wake up, connect with nature, meditate for 20 minutes, write my morning pages. When I go to bed, I do it vice versa. I meditate, I write a 10 step with little Bastian in my arms, enter dream time, very conscious contacted with loving energies, and then I drift into dream time and it starts all over again. And life is definitely gift. We have a choice, and love is definitely the fabric that holds it all together. Thank you, guys. Have a blessed 24. Love you all. Thank you for your service.